Lindsay.
Well, just make sure that.
What are we
Eric Anders Lang Show. We're live.
Do you want to move this a little bit?
It's good right there.
It's good right there.
We're live. We're in the shack that houses the current clubhouse for Sweetens Cove. And we have two guests here that are in large part responsible for what happens here. Rob, we'll start with you. Can you just tell me a little bit about yourself?
I'm Rob Collins. I'm the architect of Sweetens Cove and one of the partners in the ownership group. And yeah, that's what I do.
We are. you may have heard. I don't know which episode is going to come out first, but we did do another pod just prior with Tad Moore and Patrick, and so we're just. I'll treat this as a separate pod. What you're hearing is the squeaking door of people coming and going in the clubhouse, which is smaller than a tractor trailer bed.
Oh yeah,
live in the shed.
Live in the shed. You're hearing Nash's voice right now. Nash, you're a recent transplant to West Pittsburgh, South Pittsburgh,
South Pittsburgh. Yes, Pittsburgh, Tennessee. So Nash Pater, general manager at Sweetens Cove. Yeah, it's been an amazing experience. It's in the foothills of the Smokies, and I can't be more thankful for the opportunity to be a part of it.
You came in here after a already wonderful experience working in golf. You describe your experience in Michigan doing what sounds to me like a wonderful project as well.
Yeah, definitely. Working with the city of Detroit with their golf assets, they have a portfolio of four of them. With some great history, a Donald Ross and Rackham golf course, Rouge Park, Chandler Park, and Palmer Park. So, yeah, just beautiful assets right in the city.
All public.
All public, yeah. Yep, the public assets. There's only one private in the city limits of Detroit, and that's DGC, Detroit Golf Club. So they have a lot of great membership there that supports the public assets as well. And then I was working with a contractor that had six country courses too. So we actually ran 10 properties in Metro Detroit.
So how does that align you to be the perfect guy for Sweetens Cove? And we'll get into defining or trying to define Sweetens Cove in a little bit.
Sure. I think it definitely over my years in the golf business, I've seen everything from very high-end privates to your local muni. And, you know, Sweetens Cove is definitely a unique place in golf. It gives us an opportunity to really kind of focus in on the fun, right? You guys can come out here and feel like you're a million miles away from everything, but there's great golf to be had. And as far as my expertise, hey, I'm definitely just want you to come out and have some fun.
Yeah, I can tell. That's definitely top priority, not only for you, but for the course as well. So, Rob, I guess let's go into, you know, you and I have already had a lot of discussions that are, you know, wonderfully videotaped and on YouTube, I'm assuming, at the same time as this podcast comes out. But, you know, I jokingly referred to when I first met you as the hands of God for Sweetens Cove. Because, you know, from what I'm hearing from you, was described as a flat piece of land and a golf course that was built in 51.
Yeah.
Sequatchie Valley, Sequatchie.
Yeah.
Golf and Country Club, a 9-hole course.
Mm-hmm.
You come in after basically that course is closed.
So the guys who hired us to redo the Sequatchie Valley Golf Course were the owners of Sequatchie Concrete, which is a large concrete manufacturer here in town. It's actually one of the most successful concrete manufacturers in the United States. They have a really robust business.
So a lot of mines or something?
They have a lot of plants around the Southeast. They've expanded. They started in South Pittsburgh and have expanded around the Southeast and have been very successful. And the Sequatchie Valley Golf Course was a really important part of their life growing up. Reese, my client, told me stories about his dad hitting 7 irons to him out in the third fairway, which is over there by the creek. They had a house, that little, I don't know if you noticed, but there's a little concrete pad on the left-hand side of number 3 fairway. That used to be where they lived.
Okay.
And his dad would hit golf balls to him, and he would catch them in a baseball glove.
Amazing.
So this was a really seriously important part of their life. And the golf course had gone into pretty bad disrepair in around 2008, 2009. And it was a sad thing to watch for the Thomases to see that happen. So they bought the golf course back with the intention of doing quote unquote something to it. They weren't quite sure what they wanted to do with it. And so, you asked me about, King Emig when we were playing number four. Long story short, King, kind of a local golfing legend in Chattanooga, he put me in touch with the Thomases. He heard they might want to do something with it. And I, you know, built a relationship with the Thomas family and ended up getting the project. They kind of had a decision to make. I was a young, very ambitious guy who had been in the golf industry, passionate about golf architecture, had worked for Gary Player previously, and I was desperate to make a name for myself. And I told him straight up, like, look, if you hire us, my goal is to build you the best nine-hole golf course in the world. You know, you can hire these other guys who, you know, say they're just going to come out on the weekends. And if that's what you want, hey, it's your land. You can do whatever you want. But if you hire me, this is what I'm going to try to give you. Or you can hire these other guys and just kind of keep what you got and just expand on that a little bit. And they ended up deciding to go with us. They bought into our vision. And we started construction in 2011 and finished in 2012. And then,
what would you say is, after seeing this completed and like from what I've heard you say, clearly being able to evaluate this project as a success,
mm-hmm.
based on, you know, future opportunities for you and this success of people coming out here to what is an unlikely golf destination, in your words, what do you see as the single, if there is, single most ingredient to success in a project like this, right? Like in general, what do you need? Do you need someone to be open-minded? Do you need someone to be able to come in with free license? What do you need? Like what maybe if there are more than one ingredient, what are all the ingredients that you really have to have to turn an abandoned golf course into something really, really interesting that people are now and for the last several years paying attention to?
I think it's multiple ingredients. I mean, there were, you know, you joked about me being the hand of God, and I was quick to let you know that there were a lot of people who were talented people who were involved in it, not just me. And, you know, it takes on the design and construction side some very talented and driven people who are willing to fight through some difficult situations to just see the creation come to life. I mean, we're talking about my partner, Tad King, Gus Grantham, our lead shaper on the project. And then on the client side, you know, I have to talk about Reese Thomas. I mean, he had a really strong backbone through some difficult circumstances with respect to the differences in their family and the vision of the course. There were some differing opinions about what we should be doing out here, and he held really strong, and he bought into us and let us do our thing. And without Reese's strong backbone, you know, this never would have happened. Without a shaper with the caliber and talent of Gus Grantham, it never would have happened. Without my partner Tad King's ability to manage construction and then it helped finish a golf course, never would happen. Without my design thoughts and just total unwillingness to quit, it wouldn't happen. So there's a lot of factors.
Was there a part of you when, you know, your pitch to get this job is essentially, I want to make the best nine-hole course on earth, which is bold. You know, like, I mean, if someone came into my office and said, I want to work for you and my goal is to, you know, make the best whatever it is thing that I need, I would be like, that's awesome. Like I need you to own this more than I do, and I'm the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think on some level, oh man, I forgot my question. All right, I'm gonna flip. I'll remember it in a second. Zach, I was gonna ask you, what is the calls? We're in this shack. There was a clubhouse 50 feet away that blew away. We're in the shack now. Yeah. We've got merch on a rolling rack. We got a fridge. We got a desk with some whiskey on it. It's low key. What you're in here? What are the calls you're getting? You know, when people call into Sweet and Skull, what are they getting?
Yeah, so there's a huge following throughout America in architectural, you know, awakening happening throughout the golf industry. So it's you get phone calls from New York, you get phone calls from California, and everybody's just curious on, you know, what all the fuss is about. And it's about a beautifully designed, strategic 9-hole golf course that makes people think. And when you're talking about golf, that's all you want. You want to get out there and feel the land on your feet and really get you to think and find some peace out on the golf course. So that's what I tell them, and that's what you're going to get when you come to Sweetens Cove, that's for sure. So
people literally call and they say, what's all the fuss about?
Yeah, they definitely do. Are those pictures online real?
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
so
incredible. Those must be just people who are like, want to come out here, but it's a little far for them to just drive.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and you've seen a steady increase over the last 4 years of, you know, just a lot of business golf travelers going all over the place, to Bandon, to Cabot Links, to these new places, Stream Song, and Sweetens Cove is right in that mix. So it's a destination, it's a pilgrimage, definitely. A lot of first timers.
I think there's naturally a lot of skepticism too, because we're used to, as golfers, being fed a steady diet of bullshit from people about whether their products, whether it's a golf club or a golf ball or a golf course, you know, it's like, come on, it's not that good.
Everything's paid.
Yeah, it's all
Golf bullshit. Channel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You went to Sea Island? Shocker.
Yeah, right. No way. Yeah, so it's like, the amount of hype and stuff that this golf course has received, I mean, I get it, that why people would say, really?
I mean, yeah, I think it's the thing, that, too, that's really, craft
but
culture.
That's ultimately, I think, one reason why this place has been successful is that it was born out of just necessity. And there was no room for bullshit.
No, right. No. What you see is what you get.
It's never been well capitalized. It's all been about the golf. And so what you see is what you get.
What did you mean, Nash, when you said craft culture?
Yeah, so, you know, industries throughout, every kind of business change and adapt. And you're going to see that in the golf course industry. You're seeing it right now is there's a craftsmanship to the new golf era. And Rob's leading that charge with other great architects. And Sweetens Cove is the embodiment of that craft culture. Bottom line, it's, you know, born out of necessity. I mean, you see it here in the shed. You see all the studs. And
you got a press board roof with some writing on it. But apparently the wood is rated.
Yeah.
And this is great. Exposed light bulbs.
But then what you have on the walls, too, you've got, let's see, four Josh Bills paintings, a ballpark blueprint, you know, flags from the last ringer with Zach Blair, and it's got a lot of very talented individuals. Character.
Yeah.
I'm honored to be a guest of yours today.
We're honored to have you.
I mean,
you're part of the movement, baby.
But this is one of those. situations.
Yeah, you're just as important, right?
Yeah, this is one of those situations where I look back and I'm like, okay, we're sitting in here doing a podcast with Eric, and it's like,
it's awesome.
It's impossible to explain to people how much of a miracle it is that we're even sitting here talking. I mean, on so many different levels. It's a miracle the golf course ever got built. It's a miracle it got finished. That was just one part of it. And then the whole thing with us taking it over, I mean, it has been...
We do incredibly own the shed difficult. Outright.
Now we actually own the shed.
You own the shed.
That's
amazing.
Yeah, we were paying off $250.
You know, a little rent to own never hurt anybody. Okay.
I remember my question, Rob. My question was going to be, with such a bold statement for your interview to make the course, was there at any point in the process of you know, lack of certainty on your part? Were you like maybe I can't, or maybe I didn't, or maybe you know, we talked a lot about the earth moving that it took to make this place, you know, a floodplain originally flat. You come in and move things around like we're in the dunes. It's a Lynx course.
Yeah. So when I first came out here, When King first emailed me and told me about it, I came out here. It was July of 2010, and I walked down the hill down there to the kind of left side of where the waste bunker is now. There was an old shed down there where their maintenance facility was, and there's like yellow jackets buzzing around, and there's this flat golf course out there that was in bad disrepair. And it would, I mean, I'd say, not joking, it was the worst golf course I'd ever seen.
Yes, I love
and
it.
And so the way I got
most improved.
Yeah, the way most yeah, improved. Yeah. Exactly. So the way I got in touch with King was through the superintendent at Lookout Mountain, because I'd wanted to help Gil Hines redo Lookout Mountain. He got hired to do a master plan at Lookout Mountain, and that never happened.
It didn't happen.
But then Gil got hired to do Sewanee, which is where I went to college. And there was a country nine-hole golf course for the university up there, and I wanted to get involved with that. And then King said, I will be happy to help you out with that. But because King was heading up that from the Sewanee, and he was a Sewanee guy too. And he said, but I'll do you one better. I've put you in touch with the Thomas family, and go check out this Squatchy Valley Golf and Country Club. I mean, I grew up in Chattanooga. I'd never heard of it.
Never heard of it. And you played golf your entire life. You're a bit of a player. I saw you swing.
Well, I'd never wasn't on the radar. And,
wow.
That's a weird thing about Chattanooga too. And I think it's part of the reason our business had struggled for the first few years is, and I'm getting off track, but South Pittsburgh to a person from Chattanooga is like, that's a long way away.
Sure.
Even though it's only 30 minutes.
30 minutes, yeah.
But anyway, so I came out here.
30 minutes driving 60 miles an hour the entire time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so
Be careful on 24, yeah. too. That highway is no joke.
Yeah.
So I get out here, and I'm like, I had this moment, and I thought, what in the hell are you doing with your life? I mean, really, if this is where you got to start, you know? I mean, is this seriously? And because it was that bad. I mean, it was just like, am I really going to try to go out on my own and all that? I mean, I was desperate to go out on my own. I mean, one time I was interviewing with Scott Farrell, the president of Gary Player Design. It was the stupidest thing I've ever said in an interview. He said, what do you want long-term in your career? And I was like, I want to go out on my own. You don't tell the president of Gary Player Design that you want to be out on your own. But I mean, that was a goal of mine. But the reality of it hitting me in the face out here was like, I mean, it was such a daunting task to even consider, because it was such a bad course. And then
we got
into it.
Can we just take a moment and I'm you love golf.
Yeah.
Right? You played it all your life, I'm assuming.
Since I was 11 or
something. Okay. And you've worked in golf course architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm just curious to know, what is it actually like when you walk out to a golf course and say, this is bad? Right. I mean, maybe I may not be as like trained as Andy Johnson or something like that, but it must have been really bad for you to come out here and say how bad it is. And I'm just curious to know, like, that feeling of walking onto a golf course, pondering the rest of your life, looking at a place that is completely uninspiring to you. Like, that's what happened?
Mm-hmm. There was an open concrete ditch going down the middle of 7 and 8 fairway. The approach into number 8 was about 15 yards wide. There were so many trees on the right-hand side of the fairway. You would hit golf balls into number 1 in the middle of summer, and the ball would disappear into the ground. The nickname of the golf course was Squishy Valley. It's heavy clay soils. When Gus was shaping number 1, there were golf balls from 1960 bouncing off the blade like frogs scattering in a pond. I mean, they were thousands of golf balls. Reese would tell stories about, you kill a drive out there in the middle of, in, you know, right in the. But it was just, it was not a pretty sight, but it had a couple things going for it: a great setting, a pretty good routing, and, you know, going back to the client, they really let us turn loose. I mean, whatever we do in the rest of our career, I will contend that we were very, very lucky to have Reese buy into our vision, because, you know, you could have a Cor Crenshaw or a Gil Hines, somebody who has this, you know, sterling record and resume, and today they could have clients that would not let them do all the shit we did out here.
Wow. That's fascinating.
You know, they would, there's a chance that they could get reined in. And so for Reese, first time out of the gate is a solo project to, you know, let us really do our thing was great. And that was a big part of it. And there were a lot of sleepless nights because we were pushing the envelope out here. And you know, I wanted to do something unique. And there are certain things that we were doing. I didn't want to go overboard. I wanted to stay tethered in the fundamentals of good architecture. And we touched the line a couple times, but
Shout out to Thomas' family.
Yeah.
Shout out to Thomas' family and his vision, right?
Yeah,
I think we were able to
keep it tethered to the ground and not let it float away.
Thank God. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, Precision Pro, everybody. Precision Pro Golf makes amazing golf rangefinders that are the perfect combination of price and performance. Listen, whenever I see someone on the range or wherever I go, if I see someone with a Precision Pro rangefinder, I see a paisano, a countryman, someone who's not interested in basically overpaying for a product. Same way I feel about Vice Balls, you know, it's just like we cut out the middleman, we make a great product, and we get it out to you so that you can basically afford it. I mean, I don't know. I would rather have something that's good value, right? Right now, the NX7 Pro is on sale. Whoa, $40 off. Go get it. $40 off, that's a good deal. What's even better is that you can get an additional $10 off for being a listener of the podcast when you use the promo code ERIC at checkout. That's $50 off. I mean, jeez, I'm going to go get some. I've said that already. Over 800 verified reviews from real golfers can't be wrong. Here's what Ty had to say about his NX7 Pro rangefinder. He goes, while waiting on the tee box in my last round, there was a hawk flying overhead. The NX7 Pro is so fast and accurate that I was able to measure the distance to the hawk while it was moving. 178.4 yards, if you're curious. So that's about that's an easy six, hard seven. If the NX7 Pro golf rangefinder can measure a hawk, it can definitely measure a flag. That's been my experience. Well, also Ty's experience. Go to precisionprogolf.com and use coupon code ERIC, E-R-I-K, to get $50 off the NX7 Pro rangefinder today. Swing with confidence, hit more greens with Precision Pro Golf. All right, one more read, folks. Adidas. Over 5 million pieces of plastic are floating in our oceans, which over time get broken down, making it easy for sea life to ingest, ultimately affecting our own food chain. So it is your problem. It's not just a world problem. It's you. It affects you. Adidas is working with Parley to prevent plastic entering our oceans and transform it into high-performance sportswear. Shoes is coming soon. Just hold on. Hold your hats, folks. I'm not even done with the ad. Stop trying to figure out what I'm going to say. Adidas is spinning the problem into what? A solution. The thread into a thread. I don't know what that means. It's written here. It says the thread into a thread. I don't know who wrote this. Adidas Golf is bringing eco-innovation to the golf course in the form of a special edition shoe. All right, this is legit, actually. This is the first time the Parley shoe has been a golf shoe. I've had it in form of a running shoe. I mean, look, it's a sick shoe that serves a purpose, okay? That's where you get it. The Tour 360 XT Parley, the first ever golf shoe. Oh, look, they already wrote it for me. The first ever golf shoe made from recycled. Oh, no, it's not called recycled. It's called upcycled. I don't know what that is. I feel like I should probably Google that. Upcycled plastic waste that was intercepted like Jason Bourne from the beaches and coastal communities before reaching the ocean. Dang, I didn't realize this is Jason Bourne's golf shoe. Intercepted. I mean, I'm a golf guy, but I also love football. Who doesn't love a classic interception, especially when it's Jason Bourne saving planet Earth? Entire upper of the shoe is made with threads spun. It's also a DJ. Amazing. From the upcycled plastic waste.
My phone's ringing. It's Andrew Marler. Hang on. All right. Well, that was a 20-minute phone call, but you have no idea. It just went by like that. Anyway, the Tour 360 XT Parlay, the first ever golf shoe made from upcycled plastic. I already read this because it's got the intercepted line. Intercepted from beaches and coastal communities in a world before reaching the ocean. The entire upper of the shoe is made from thread spun from upcycled plastic waste. Built as the Tour 360 XT, you still get great traction and stability. I feel like, what's that line from Taken? I have a certain set of skills. They will take you. Available starting June 10th at adidas.com, and for those headed to the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, a select number of pairs will be sold on site. Get into it, folks. All right, back to the show. Okay, so I am curious to know, were either of you here when Brad Klein did his reviews, his ratings?
So the way the Golf Week rating works is they have a rating panel, a couple hundred raters or whatever around the country, and we knew some people who were raters, and the word just kind of spread organically amongst the rating community, and we started to get some ratings in 2015 when we first opened. But we didn't get enough to get nationally ranked, but we got enough to get ranked in the state. And our first ranking came out as in 2016, we were the number one public course in the state.
Wow.
That was our first.
In all of Tennessee?
Yes.
How many other great golf courses are out here?
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty big deal.
That's a lot.
And so that shook a lot of people up. I remember Patrick calling me. I mean, he was so pumped up because he had gotten a phone call. And then we felt like we had a shot at the top 100 modern because we knew what other courses were on the list and everything, and we felt like we had a good chance at being on that.
Rob's a little distracted because apparently 4 pizzas just arrived. Is that for us? 8 pizzas. This is not for us, is it? I don't know. We got pizzas coming in. We're a little confused. Yeah. There's no, a cool. Birdie.
Can you,
Birdie the small the black
one. Yeah, let's do it on the porch. Yeah.
We have a table out there. Oh, what's up, Birdie?
Birdie
in the house.
Dog is in here.
Birdie out.
I apologize. I don't apologize. I'm unapologetic.
Yeah, we're at Sweetens Cove. This is all normal.
This is how it works. So 8 pizzas just arrived.
So we were talking about, what was I talking about?
Well, I'm curious to know because here's the thing. Brad Klein.
Oh yeah,
if
so
you're listening.
We were talking about the ratings. So then we started to get more raters out here, and we felt like we had a shot at top 100 modern. Pretty good place on that. You know, the Dunes Club was ranked 30 or something like that, and we ended up in the 2017 ranking was when we got 59, and then So yeah, the first one was 59. Then 2018, we were 50.
Wow. Because just to give some people listening some background, Brad Klein is a friend of the pod. He was on. We spoke with him when we were at Pinehurst this year, and I was interested to hear you talk about number two as being inspiration for you in some sense for Sweetens. I believe that sounds.
That's absolutely true. I mean, number two is baked into the DNA here, big time.
So, Brad, on the podcast, I believe he talked about it on the podcast. It's a great podcast if you haven't heard it. But he talks about how you can't play a golf course and review it at the same time. Hmm. And I was curious to know, because he's the one who essentially oversaw the Golf Week rating.
That's right. He's created the rating panel.
Yeah. And so he's the one who's basically saying, you know, Rob, you got a half zip on. It's a tan color. It's nice texture. It's got a logo on it that actually coincidentally looks a lot like my signature. And it's the Sand Valley logo. And the reason why I'm pointing that out is because Sweetens Cove, 9 holes, ranked above Sand Valley's, well, probably 18 at the time, but now 36. Cor Crenshaw, I mean, that's big, man.
Yeah, that was huge. That was huge.
Did they call you? Did Cor Crenshaw give you a buzz?
Cor Crenshaw didn't give me a buzz, but I certainly called the Kaisers and said, hey,
let's go.
If we can do this on 72 acres and dead flat heavy clay soil in a floodplain, what do you think I can do up there?
Good for you.
So
Kaisers are a great group of people.
They are. Yeah.
When you talk about, let's just dream for a second, right? I mean, you guys, I get a lot of messages. I want to work in the golf business. I want to work in the golf business. You guys have dream jobs, yeah? Dream job.
Absolutely.
Dream job.
I mean, yes.
Nash?
I'm at my dream job. With great people, great golf course. No matter where you go in America, this place is special. So I'm really excited about being here.
What's your life like here? Oh, yeah. By the way, I just noticed your incredible, put your hands together. Put your hands together. No, flat so I can see the backs of your hands. No, back like that. You've got a pretty impressive golf tan going. Your left hand is about 15% lighter than your right hand.
So
your dream job is you get to play a lot of golf.
Yeah, get to play a lot of golf, interact with a lot of different people from a lot of different walks of life.
You're the host.
I am.
You're like the president of the club. You, there is no private club involved with Sweetens Cove.
Nope.
But in a sense, all you need to do is show up to be a member.
That's it.
And you're the host.
Yes, sir.
Everyone is coming out as your guest. That's beautiful, man.
Yeah, and we welcome them with a shot of whiskey for all first-timers to get the Tennessee vibe right.
Got about 8 choices here, maybe 7 choices.
Yeah, guys come in from all over the place and donate bottles of whiskey, and it really kind of gives them a first look at Sweetens Cove, right, is in the shed, and you see the number 50 ranking, and you see these beautiful paintings of Rob's masterpiece, and you go, whoa, what kind of place is this? And I'm there to greet you with a smile and a handshake and let you know that you're welcome, no matter where you're coming from.
Where did the name come from?
Sweetens Cove.
Sweetens Cove came from... So the Sequatchie Valley is a valley that runs a long way through Tennessee, and Sweetens Cove is a geographical location within that valley. And my mom actually has a old, do you remember those maps with the little, that have the relief on them? Like you would see them hanging on the walls, like you could kind of see where the mountains were and the rivers and the valleys and all that. She has one on her wall that was probably printed back in the 60s or 70s, and I was looking at it one day, and it's called Sweden Cove, as in the country Sweden, on that map. So it originally was called Sweden Cove, and then the way the locals pronounced it became Sweeten Cove, Sweetens Cove. There's Sweden apostrophe S Cove. So there's about 4 or 5 different ways people to this day still refer to it. I mean, some people put the apostrophe, some people don't. Some locals call it Sweeten Cove, Sweeten, no S. But I think it's all derived from the Sweden thing, which one time Patrick and I and a couple of our friends were just kind of bullshitting, and we thought, you know what would be a cool flag is if we took the Swedish flag but did our blue and our dark blue, light blue club colors and made that was the flag that we had on the golf course, and there's one right behind you. We, you know, have that out on the course.
That is a really cool story.
So that's where that's why that flag with the cross is, because it's, you know, Sweden Cove.
I love that. I mean, I'm Swedish.
Yeah.
So the proper spelling is Sweetens, no apostrophe.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
If you're from the north, you would pronounce it Sweetens Cove.
Sweetens Cove.
It's really a great name. And what about the logo? It's a very vibey logo.
We've got a lot of logos. So our original logo was the whiskey barrel with the SC, with the Old English SC.
And the T.
And then we...
There's a T in the faucet there.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we hired a really talented guy named Ben Hollerback to design the...
I know Hollerback, yeah.
Yeah, great guy.
He's a Hickory guy, isn't he?
Yep, he is.
He's the one that turned me on to the Belvedere, to the Hickory Open.
Nice. Yep.
And I ended up meeting his father.
Yeah.
What a marvelous set of coincidences.
Yeah. So he did the SC, and then he also did this... The
Dunwoody tree.
The Dunwoody tree, and then he did the bunker logo.
Right here.
Yeah.
Oh wow, the sort of diamond.
Yeah, that's the one that's number one, the bunker on number one.
So
we've had fun just messing around with the merchandise.
That's a good vibe.
One of our members came up with the name. He started calling this place the Pine Valley of the Sequatchie Valley. And we were like, okay.
Who said that?
Was it John? No, it was a dude we were playing with the other day.
Paul.
No.
John?
Paul? How many members do we got?
Oh, God.
Well, we only have 10.
There's 10 members?
Yeah.
I didn't recognize him the other day, because he had shaved his beard.
Seth? Yes.
Yeah, Seth Stewart.
Seth of the Pine Valley of the Sequatchie Valley.
Yeah. So Seth came up with the name Pine Valley of the Sequatchie Valley. I'm embarrassed. Anyway. So.
It's fine.
So we were laughing about that.
And I, right.
Exactly.
Shout out Seth.
What's up, Seth?
So we were laughing about that, and we said, I'm going to send this to Ben and see what he can come up with. And Ben just like ran with it and came up with this cool little tree logo with the SCGC.
We talked a little bit about, the generalized view of golf and the idea that most courses are 18 holes. Sweetens Cove, half that. And it still packs a punch. It still is worth a trip. It still maintains its reputation as a valuable experience in golf, especially, as Andy Johnson would say, for the woke. Right? I don't know. How often do you get into the conversation, Rob, about 9 or 18?
People come up and, a lot of times you'll hear when people check in here, are you ever going to build 9 more? I mean, it's kind of gotten to be a joke. And
that could be a t-shirt.
Yeah.
It is.
We've talked about that, actually. The idea going into this was that we were going to build 9 golf holes with so much variety that you weren't going to leave the place feeling like you were lacking in any way.
Yeah, you'd want to play over and over again.
And that's maybe the ultimate success of it all is that people can come out here and play 36 to 54 plus holes in a day and not feel like, I really wish there had been 9 more. I mean, the only sense that you would say that would be that, like, that'd be really cool if there were 9 more like this. Yeah, it would be really cool if there were, but you don't need them. I mean, it's not necessary.
We walked off the ninth green, and I really had a hard time believing that we, in fact, played 9.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel like 9. I played a lot of 9-hole courses. In fact, I started playing on a 9-hole course, and it's Roosevelt. Actually, Forrest Richardson is in the middle of redoing it, which is pretty exciting.
Oh, cool.
Because that's, in a sense, the course I grew up on at age 30. But, that is a wild walk through the woods of the Hollywood Hills, mm-hmm. right? Or Los Feliz Hills. And, it's got views galore, but it feels like a 9-hole course,
mm-hmm.
right? Some of the holes are isolated. You don't see anything else. And that sort of tends to make a course feel bigger or longer or whatever it is. And even with all of those attributes, I come here onto what is essentially, it's a square piece of land, right? It's a rectangle.
Square. It's a big square. Yeah.
It's a big square. And you can see a lot of the holes from the other holes, which probably adds to it. You pointed out on the third tee, this is your favorite spot on the course. Can you describe, David McClay Kidd, I got to play with him at Mammoth. And he said, one of the things that you have to do as an architect and you have to give to the golfer is a peek, mm-hmm. right? Like a glimpse.
Mm-hmm.
You did that.
Mm-hmm.
Coming into the third tee after the second green, you immediately see 9. You're as far away as you can be from 9.
You're on the other corner and you can see it.
Yeah, and you can see this wonderful, what I'm assuming is frequently, is that 9 right there?
Yeah, that's number 9 right there.
It's looking back. Talk about the ethos of that, of the experience of playing the course and I guess that.
Well, I think that Kid is right that's a very important part of architecture, in that if you give somebody a glimpse in landscape architecture, they call it conceal and reveal. You're concealing a little bit from somebody, you're not giving them the full picture, and then they kind of go down the driveway, and then the house and the yard reveals itself to them. You get a little glimpse, and then it fully reveals itself. And having little snapshots of a golf course as you go throughout it can create some, I think, some psychological tension and also some anticipation. And the thing I always thought about when we were building this golf course was I grew up going down rivers and around the southeast with my parents. They used to love to canoe, and you'd get really nervous. Your heart would start pounding when you would, you know, hear that rapid off in the distance. And to me, psychologically, coming around number two and looking up at number nine was like when I was a kid going down the Hiawassee and I could hear Devil Shoals in the distance. You know, it's like you look and you see this big splash of sand and this really tough looking crazy green with this big thing, you know, kicking up on the right. And you're like, you know, you're going to get there at some point, you know, like I can't walk off this golf course without hitting this shot. That's like, it's a do or die shot, you know? And so those little bit of anticipation that you get is really important. And the way the golf course out here flows together and ties together in the relationship between the holes is extremely important in the way it flows. And, you know, all that was thought out and done intentionally. And it creates a certain feel, and there's an ebb and flow to the routing. And, you know, we were standing on 3T, and I think you said, "Now tell me about this, Rob." And I said, "You know, this is the start of what I would consider the heart of the golf course. You know, one and two are kind of an introduction, and three, four, and five are like, whoa, you're like, holy shit, like we're here, somewhere different. You know, this place is legit." And then, you know, six, you kind of getting into a little bit of rhythm, and then, you know, seven, eight, nine are kind of a nice finishing stretch where you kind of. Yeah. Kind of hope you land the plane. And and number nine's I think a great finishing hole because it's got an amphitheater setting, and it can kill you, or you can finish in ultimate glory with a hole in one. I mean, we've had a completely disproportionate number of hole in ones on that hole for the amount of rounds we've had. I mean, there's been a ton. I mean, I was telling you the story earlier about the high school girls match where the girls hit three hole-in-ones in one day, and two of them were back-to-back. So
nine is such an interesting hole. In fact, it might be, I think, I think I was able to contextualize it as well. Luckily, you know, it's the last hole we're playing, but, you know, it succeeded in the sense that I hit a well-struck ball, but it didn't, I think that I was not able to swing freely. I think something about that incredible view that you have on the tee, it succeeds in the sense that, you know, the architect beat me.
Yeah.
You got me.
Yeah.
You it's know, a the, short the, par the, three. The, it's 140.
The great short holes strike the fear of God into you. But at the same time, if you hit a good shot, they're going to reward you and let you have a look at birdie. And that's, I'm a total sucker for good short par threes. Good short par fours and reachable par fives are the most fun and interesting types of holes in golf. And, you know, well done short threes are an important part of the arsenal. So
in the original design, it was a par three as well, the finishing hole, the ninth hole. Were you like locked in, like, yeah, let's do another par three finisher? Or were you like thinking about it, or did it just make sense to continue?
No, it made sense to continue with that. The old ninth hole actually finished underneath the tree that you try to hit over when you're on number one. So anyone who's played here before will, it was in a completely different location, and why that was over there, I have no idea. The original ninth hole before some developers got a hold of it and put those houses up across the road came up here, and the ninth green wasn't far from where the shed was. And then when those developers did that, they moved the ninth green down. Well, I don't know why they moved it down underneath that tree, but that's neither here nor there. But it just kind of made sense. And we had this hillside, and, you know, kind of from an architectural standpoint, I think whenever you have some contour to work with, it's, you know, take advantage of it. And so we built the green, kind of benched it into that hill, and had that opportunity to flash sand up behind it, which was a nice visual, and also, you know, functions as a hazard as well. And then the, you know, that big sandy waste coming up in front too looks cool.
Do you, the only other golf course that I can think of that finishes on a par three is done by a maybe – mentor. I don't know. I mean, you didn't name any McKenzie courses, I don't think. But, you know, Paso Tiempo.
Paso Tiempo is a great one. Love Paso Tiempo. It's one pretty, of my favorite courses.
It's pretty incredible.
Paso Tiempo is the bomb.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it's a great example of perhaps, you know, the idea of public golf functioning in a way that supports the education for people that want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so hard to get out and play. I mean, I am privileged to be able to sort of play great courses. In fact, let's talk about that for a little bit. I have been struggling a little bit because when I came to golf, it was the Los Feliz, you know, par three mm-hmm. course. And I would steal a receipt out of the trash, and I would go and play a replay rate, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
and for $4 or whatever, you know. And that's because that's where I, you know, like that was what I was going to do. I had used clubs that I would recycle through this 90-day return policy that the golf store had,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it's like cut to now, and it's kind of like, you know, it's just an interesting place that I'm in where it's like, you know, with the opportunity to basically play almost wherever I want, right, like. There, I have an invite to play Pine Valley. I feel weird about it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel super weird about it all. And I, you know, it's like, it's hard not, it's like, it's almost like Gollum
mm-hmm.
in The Lord of the Rings. Like, it's hard not to get totally overly excited about that. And it's not about exclusivity as much. It's more about that's just a different experience or it's a noteworthy golf course, mm-hmm. you know? But I know, like, you know, I talked with Andy Johnson the other night. We had dinner and talked about this particular topic and how for him, it's like, well, he's just focusing on the architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. What, I mean, I'm focusing on the people I play golf with and mm-hmm. how to play.
Mm-hmm.
So that changes when we go to a really fancy course.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where we're going to go play this afternoon at Lookout. Is that super exclusive?
It's a private golf course, but I wouldn't call it super exclusive. I mean, you know, it's not going to break the bank to be a member there, but it's a great golf course.
How do you, in your golf life, your golf experience over the years, how do you look at that difference, right? When you look at a public course versus a private course, what did you grow up on and how has that changed as you travel, right?
I grew up, the first place I ever hit a golf ball was at Signal Mountain Golf and Country Club. I grew up on a little suburb outside of Chattanooga, and it is a private course. But I played with my dad, you know, as a kid growing up. My three sports were, baseball, basketball, a lot of backyard football, some soccer. Golf was kind of an afterthought through, you know, most of my, elementary years, I'd say, but I enjoyed it. And we would go to, you know, Fall Creek Falls or, play Moccasin Bend in Chattanooga. I mean, so I played actually probably a lot more public golf growing up than I did at Signal Mountain. And, you know, moving forward, you know, I think that the reality is there's a lot more bad golf courses than there are good golf courses.
Interesting.
But within the broad swath of courses that exist in the United States and in the world, there are nuggets and hidden gems and places that have legitimate architectural interest. And I think, you know, Tom Doak's Confidential Guide has done a great job of highlighting that. And, you know, the flip side of that is that just because a place is private and has a big name and it costs $250,000 to join doesn't mean their golf course is worth a shit. A lot of times it's not.
Right.
And so you can find a course that's more architecturally compelling a lot of times for $60 than the one that's unobtainable. But at the same time, I mean, you know, the Pine Valleys of the world and places like that exist in this realm of almost untouchable architectural excellence. You know, if you get the opportunity to play at a place like that, I mean, it's kind of hard not to, because right. there's something to learn from that.
Right. I guess that is what it is.
And also I mean, I think the experience of being in a place like that, I think places have an energy and a history and a feel to them. I've never played Augusta National. I've been there a lot for the tournament. And when you're at Augusta National, there's no other Augusta National. I mean, it has a feel to it. Mm. You know, it there's a weight to that history that's there, and you can sense that when you're on that property. And I think that, you know, the really good golf courses come through in a way that's not just what you're seeing. It's there's a feel and an energy to it.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say, Nash?
Throughout, you know, my years in golf, coming from a little country track outside of Grand Rapids and just experiencing that, it was a wedding venue, you know. It was a golf course was secondary to doing, you know, hundreds of weddings a year. So every golf course and even asset has a different vibe to it. So, you know, over the years, my experience has always been just, you know, kind of podunk golf out in the country. And you know, transitioning into my adulthood, I got to, you know, work at a couple of country clubs and experience that interaction with members and the management staff, and just kind of got addicted to the business side of it. And you know, I think that's what you do. Everybody's golf experience can be different, and it can go through ebbs and flows, like Rob was talking about a golf course has. Your experience as a golfer can be that way too. So just in the last year, I've golfed so much that I've never golfed before. You know, I was never really much of a golfer. I played basketball in high school and a little bit in college, and golf wasn't really that cool to me, and I just worked in the industry. I enjoyed the interaction with the people and the business side of it. So, you know, as I'm moving here into my, you know, mid-30s and experiencing, you know, sand hills out in Nebraska and Ballyneal and, you know, Pebble Beach, and being able to, you know, have access to those kinds of places, there's, you know, it just feels really special to be on that land that, you know, only so many people see. But at the same time, I think our industry needs to open up some of those doors so the everyday golfer can, you know, have a little bit of access to those special places in golf. And Sweetens Cove is one of them, which is really cool. And that's why I enjoy being a part of this team here, is because it does open up those doors. So everybody's on their own journey in golf, and we've been watching yours and enjoying yours, because it's very similar to mine. I enjoy that you're being able to play in Japan one day, and now all of a sudden you're going to be at Sweetens Cove. So it's a very you know, different experience for you, and it is for almost every individual. Mine has been quite a journey, and excited to be involved with Rob. And you know, the future is bright. This guy's a young architect, and we need to get him on some good properties, and that's our goal. You know, these resorts throughout the nation have an opportunity to really, you know, mix it up and engage our population of golfers throughout the world in a different style. And you'll see that at Sweetens Cove. And once Rob gets one of those special properties, you're going to see it there. And I guarantee that. And it's going to be something that you really feel when you step on the property. And there's no higher regard than that, buddy.
Tim's great.
Yep.
I can't wait to hear the news about that, and I'd love to be there for the creation, right? I've always wanted to film a process and to see it come to life.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So that'd be something I'd love to talk to you about. In closing, I guess I can't really say much more, you know, in my esteem and regard of this place that I was able to experience for the first time, which I feel so lucky about. You know, seeing a place for the first time, and you know, it's you have to be wide awake. I mean, you got to be ready to go, and you know, that's I'm glad that it was a good day for that.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us, and you're welcome anytime. Come have a shot of whiskey, and we'll go play nine and chase it.
I love it. Anyone who's listening, if you're thinking about it, just don't hesitate. Just do it. Hit Nash up. He'll be here. He'll tell you why they're talking about it. And I can't say enough that there's something out there. And you know, I can't wait for the next nine.
Love it.
Not for when you build another nine, but
that's
when I play another nine.
That's right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We'll put, as like always, everything's down below. If you want to get a hold of Rod, or if you want to check him in the Sweden's Cove Instagram or Nash's Instagram. Thanks for listening, everybody.